Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Columbus City Schools on June 30th announced its plan to return students to the classrooms in fall. A few days later, Governor Mike DeWine unveiled state guidelines for reopening, and he justified the decision this way.
I think there is a strong consensus among teachers, school principals, parents, and the public around Ohio that our kids need to get back into the school building.
Even before the recent uptick in COVID-19 infections in Ohio, many parents and teachers were still worried. Now the changing landscape of the spread of the disease has districts saying never mind about their own reopenings. Alyssa Widman-Neese covers K through 12 education for the Columbus Dispatch. Welcome to the show, Alyssa.
Hi, thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Was it clear to you at that time that the governor spoke that there was strong consensus among teachers, parents, and principals that students should return to the classrooms?
Honestly, I don't believe so, in the sense that I think there is a consensus that everyone would like to see children
sure.
in the classroom,
mm-hmm.
that it certainly, you know, the way we've always done it and the way we're all familiar with. That being said, I don't think there was a consensus about whether it's safe to do that right now. And with the cases increasing in Ohio, I do think that's becoming even more so the case these days.
The guidelines that were unveiled in early July basically gave every district the power to do what they wanted to do. And I'm wondering what's your sense about how districts have employed those guidelines or lack thereof?
So for the most part here in Central Ohio, I am seeing a pretty common trend among the suburban school districts. They are working in conjunction with Franklin County Public Health to come up with their plans. So there is a pretty widespread consensus of a hybrid plan at this point to start the upcoming school year. And what that looks like is you divide students into two groups to lessen the number of students in a building at one time, and they alternate going to school 2 days a week, and then they will go online at home for the other 3 days of that week. And with the extra day when there's no children in the building, that would be a time typically for disinfecting and cleaning of the buildings. There is a slight variation there. I know Westerville City Schools just recently released a plan that would actually have students alternating full weeks in two groups versus 2 days each group. But that's what I'm seeing among the suburban schools. As you mentioned, Columbus City Schools being the largest district in the state with about 50,000 students, their situation is a little different. They were actually the first district to release any plans, and at the moment, that plan is for the alternating hybrid model for K-8 students, but high school students at this moment would be all online. That being said, on Sunday, it was announced that all online model may be something that the district is moving toward for all its students. So I think at this point, honestly, the only thing we can be certain of, which is what the Columbus Superintendent Talisa Dixon said, is that everything will change between now and the start of the school year. Schools are making it very clear that families need to be ready to pivot if things change. So honestly, what we're talking about today could be very different when the school year starts.
Right. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about what it might look like when schools reopen for the 2021 school year. My guest is Alyssa Widman-Neese. She covers K-12 education for the Columbus Dispatch. Coming up, we're going to have the superintendent of Columbus City Schools Talisa Dixon on. And also, we're going to have the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Paolo Di Maria. So bring your questions, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What are parents saying to you? What are some of the concerns you're hearing from parents?
Well, I think the uncertainty of everything is a big concern for parents because, you know, obviously, if their children are home learning, they're going to need to figure out how to balance work and schooling their children and possibly finding childcare or someone to be home learning with their child if it's a young child. So the uncertainty is a big factor there. I think there are parents who very much want their children to go back into the classroom for some of those reasons. Some are concerned about the social and emotional and mental health implications of their kids not being in class with their teachers and their classmates. Some students who may be on an IEP and need specialized instruction.
Individual education plan. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I fall victim to the education jargon after covering this for so many years.
No problem. I get it.
But I do think there are parents who are very much opposed to children going back into the classroom. You know, they're afraid of the children transmitting the virus back home, you know, bringing it back to family members who may be more at risk. In general, children are not experiencing the virus in a way that older Americans are. So,
but they can transmit it.
Exactly. Yeah. They can be asymptomatic and bring it home. So that's, I think, a big concern. And I think parents also are a bit concerned about being the ones who are making that decision. If they would opt for some of the online education options that schools are offering as an alternative to doing a hybrid model, I think they're having a lot of doubts about, am I making the correct decision for my child? Because a lot of these decisions are going to fall on them because of Ohio's home rule situation where things are varying from district to district.
There's not a one-size-fit-all online option, right? I mean, there are variations on the theme, aren't there, or not?
So many districts are offering, in addition to, say they go into the hybrid model at the start of the school year. Mm-hmm. If parents have a concern about their child returning, they can opt for a completely online environment.
Which means they're observing the class remotely.
It's not necessarily like you set a webcam in that classroom.
Okay.
It's more of like an independently navigated online platform.
Okay.
So it's completely separate.
So they wouldn't have their teacher?
It really varies from district to district. Like, I know some districts are actually exploring what appears to be outsourcing that option to already existing online schools. I received a phone call from a parent of an Upper Arlington student who said that's something that their district is exploring. She was a bit concerned because it didn't sound like her teacher, her student's teacher would be managing that. And there were some coursework that was not offered that the student could get if they went into the hybrid model that the district was proposing. Mm-hmm. So that parent felt like she had to make that choice between keeping her child home and safe, as she saw it, and possibly missing out on some of those courses that the child could have received if they went into the classroom.
Teachers and unions have sounded the alarm about returning. What are they saying?
The teachers, honestly, it's kind of similar to what the parent that I just referred to was saying. You know, there are many teachers who are in that high-risk age group, mm-hmm. or may have immune-compromised situations, and they feel like they have to choose between the career they love and keeping themselves safe, or they have an immunocompromised spouse and mm-hmm. they don't want to bring home the virus to them. Because of those hybrid models and online models, some districts are saying teachers with concerns could get first dibs if they are keeping their online options in-house to be teachers for those types of situations and stay home. Mm-hmm. That being said, most districts here are still working out a lot of details with their teachers' unions. So kind of like we alluded to earlier, really a lot could change between now and then, and, right. and there isn't a lot that's finalized. And I think that's also a concern, like the parents, for the teachers. There's just a lot of uncertainty right now about what their job might look like in the fall. And, you know, obviously teachers have worked very hard to get their degrees and get their jobs, and some feel like they may have to give that up for the sake of keeping themselves and their families safe.
What are districts saying about the cost of this uncertainty, and also the cost of the technology that they need to employ? I mean, can they afford it? Are the federal funds that they're channeling to them, is that enough?
To put it frankly, no, it's not. I think that here in Columbus City Schools, for example, I think the early estimates were it would cost, I believe, $100 million to implement all of the standards and things that are still not quite ironed out, like extra bus routes if mm-hmm. students need to stay apart on buses. That being said, the money that's funneling here at the state level, it might be enough to cover like the big urban districts, and that's it. But when you look at the 600 school districts in the state, I think the consensus is it's kind of a drop in the bucket right now. There are some efforts to help alleviate those costs. I know yesterday the city of Columbus announced that it will be allocating $7 million of CARES Act funding to help Columbus City Schools purchase additional Chromebook laptops for students, but that even isn't enough to purchase laptops for every student in that district. The district has had to allocate most of its existing technology and send it home with kids, which is what they started to do in the spring.
Any particular observations about how rural districts are grappling with these issues?
My focus is primarily in Central Ohio, so I'm not as familiar mm-hmm. with the rural situation, but I do know in terms of internet access, it is a huge problem if districts are trying to do an online option. So while in an urban setting, students may have more challenges being able to afford the internet. Mm-hmm. In the rural areas, even if they could afford it, it's possible they may not be able to access it. Or if they can, it's not at a high enough speed to do some of the activities that will be expected of them. So it's still a challenge, just in a different way.
And Alyssa Widmanese, I'm going to let you go after this question, but I'm just kind of interested in what your thoughts are about how the pandemic and how these challenges could change the nature of our system of education. It's very much patterned on a factory model where, you know, the bell rings and you go to class and, you know, it's a work day for kids. The way we've developed it in this, any thoughts about how that might change?
I do think that it is forcing a lot of school districts to really take a look at how much they are investing and prioritizing technology and giving students different options for how they may learn best. While many students have struggled with the online platform, I'm sure there are some students who really benefit from that self-paced learning. Mm-hmm. And I do know districts that have already had existing one-to-one technology programs have found this transition to be a lot easier. So their investment ahead of time gave them a bit of a head start. So I think for those districts that haven't invested already, it's certainly speeding up that process. And I do think that it's going to have a lasting impact on schools the same way that all of us working from home is mm-hmm. going to affect working in the private sector. Mm-hmm. I think now that employers have seen how working from home can work in some instances, it's probably going to be pretty difficult to go back to the way things always were.
Alyssa, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it today.
Yeah, thank you.
Alyssa Widmanese, she covers K-12 education for the Columbus Dispatch. Coming up, Talisa Dixon, superintendent and CEO of Columbus City Schools, and also Paolo Di Maria. He is a state superintendent of public instruction. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. When Ohio's school children left their classrooms in mid-March to shelter at home during the pandemic outbreak, no one was sure when they would go back. Going on 5 months later, most are still unsure. Governor DeWine unveiled guidelines in early July, and many districts were unveiling their own plans in accordance. The uptick in COVID-19 cases has changed that dynamic. Paolo Di Maria is the Ohio Superintendent of Public Instruction. Welcome to the show, Paolo.
And it's great to be with you.
And Talisa Dixon is Superintendent and CEO of Columbus City Schools. Welcome back, Talisa.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Talisa Dixon, who was involved in the planning to reopen in the first place? What kind of group did you put together?
Well, we put together over 150 stakeholders, which included teachers, central office administrators, parents, various partners who work with the district, our union president. So it's a lot of people come together and helped us put together this plan for the fall.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like herding cats at a certain level. How did you finally boil it down to something manageable?
Well, we had several working groups that were working on specific areas. And everyone was so, you know, one, we learned a lot from the spring. And, you know, so many people were saying, okay, this is what we cannot do. And then here are some opportunities for us to really do something innovative in the classroom. So our teachers really had a lot of good ideas to bring to the forefront. And that was the creative lessons that they could do using technology as a lever. So we knew that when we reopened, one, technology had to be in the forefront. We needed to make sure our students had the devices We needed to change our curriculum needs so that we were using more online curriculum rather than those textbooks that students would take home. So it gave us the opportunity to say, how can we reimagine education, the future of education, and using technology as a lever to do so. And then the other pieces were just people just filling in how to make sure that the environment was safe. Mm-hmm. How do we make sure we have the PPE? All of those things as we think about reopening.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That is Talisa Dixon. She's superintendent and CEO of Columbus City Schools. Also with us, Paolo Di Maria. He is the superintendent of public instruction for the state of Ohio. Paolo Di Maria, jumping off from what Talisa Dixon was just talking about, you know, reimagining schools, I'm wondering what you think about how this pandemic is going to have a permanent imprint on education, how it might change education and what we think of it. I asked Elisa Widman-Neese of the Dispatch that as well, that is something going to change fundamentally from this kind of factory day system that we have in place currently?
Yeah, so I love what Talisa's saying, because I think it's exactly in line with those who are not simply looking at this as a technical challenge, but looking at it as an opportunity to reshape education as we know it. So I think there are definite implications for the future. Like she said, a lot of people were thrust into a very disruptive situation. But what did teachers do? They do what they always do best, and they learn new things. They explored new things. They figured out what works for students, what works for them. How can they leverage this challenging situation that they were in and still provide continuity of education? And just as Talisa mentioned, they're now reflecting on that and trying to figure out how does that work on an ongoing basis, both in terms of the challenging and really uncertain time that we're going into, but then also for the long term. And I think a lot of people have talked about the role of technology in education for a long time. And I think this precipitating event has actually gotten us to focus on it in a much more deliberate and integrative fashion.
It's also, though, brought in stark relief how the rest of our society kind of revolves around the traditional school day, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. People rely on having those structures in place, especially when kids are at a younger age,
right,
because it is a critical element of the of the childcare system. We don't always think about it in those terms until we're faced with the reality that here are those children at home, in some ways interrupting the ability of mom and dad to go to work.
Yeah, and Talisa Dixon, what are your concerns about those kids who don't have proper, because their parents have to work, aren't going to have proper care?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's where our partners come in. We have so many people who have said, Talisa, what do you need? How can we help? And we're working on that plan. So it's one of those coming together. How can the city of Columbus wrap itself around the school district and say, what do our families need? What do our students need? And let's put a plan together, put it in place, and we will implement that plan. And I think it goes back to how schools will be different. And I think, in prior, we kind of worked a little bit in silos. It was like, hey, we may be able to do this. We do this. Maybe mm-hmm. we'd do a little of this with the schools. And now it's saying we really need to embrace our schools and our families in order for our students to be successful, in order for our families to be able to help our students. Then we have to work together. And that's what Columbus City Schools is going to do. Work with our partners, work with our parents to ensure that our students have the best educational experience that they possibly can during this global pandemic.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's Talisa Dixon, superintendent and CEO of Columbus City Schools. Also with us, Paolo Di Maria. He is superintendent of public instruction for the state of Ohio. And we're talking about what's going to happen with schools going forward this fall and maybe in a larger sense, writ large in the future. How has the pandemic changed education? If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I want to get to some calls, but first I want to, again, jump off from what Superintendent Dixon said and Superintendent Di Maria, the a big tenet of Governor DeWine's budget for education at the outset of the year was wraparound services and taking care of the kids who are falling through the cracks with all kinds of social services. They're called wraparound services. And now districts, the schools, education is facing a $300 million cut going into this year. And wraparound services, even if you could afford them, are all kind of different when kids aren't actually in the building, right?
Yeah, to a certain extent. But at the same time, again, I love what Talisa's saying about partners. And that's really what Governor DeWine's initiative was all about, not only infusing resources, but then saying, look, you need to plan for meeting the needs of your students, and you need to develop and strengthen the partnerships that you have. And when school buildings were closed in the spring, we saw so much of that bubble up because exactly as Talisa said, people stepped forward and said, what can we do to help? And it wasn't just a one-time ask, because I think that led to conversations that are ultimately building stronger relationships, stronger partnerships that will persist and move past this pandemic period. So it will require there to be creative approaches to exactly how to make sure our students get the services that they need. But we saw a lot of that during the school building closure period. And I expect that we'll see a lot more because there are a lot of creative people applying their thinking to exactly how to support our students in this time of their need.
Again, the number to call with questions or comments, 614-292-8513. And Robert in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Robert.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I work for doctors.
Dixon?
I can hear myself on the phone.
Oh, okay.
And it's distracting.
Yes, understood.
I'm curious. I've not heard in all the conversations about, in fact, I remember early in the pandemic when plans were being discussed, it was published that one of the roadblocks was figuring out transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard in the Sunday release the possibility that schools will be 100% online.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering what the plans are for the got to be 1,000 employees in the transportation department if that happens.
Talisa,
and I can listen to my answer offline.
Okay. Thank you, Robert. Talisa Dixon, what about that challenge?
Yeah, that is a challenge. You know, first and foremost, you know, our priority is to make sure we keep our entire CCS community, that's our students, our staff, administrators, safe during this ongoing coronavirus pandemic. And that priority has not changed and it will not change. So, however, we need to make sure that, you know, how we open in the fall will be guided by what we learned from our safety, in health experts, and transporting students is part of that. How we transport our students. There have been some recommendations of how we do that, and we have to make sure, again, that we're following the guidelines of our health officials. So more information to come. I know a lot of people want answers right now,
mm-hmm.
but we're learning new information every day. And as we know more, we will update our community of what those new developments are.
Well, hypothetically, if classes do not in any way, if all classes go completely online or distance learning, however we want to talk about it in the fall, what happens to all the bus drivers?
Well, a couple of things. One, we can be very creative in how they help us leverage the online learning. We can possibly have them to help assist with calling parents, checking on students. So we can utilize them, again, in a very different way. So it goes back to that reimagining education and then schools. How can we get other people to help us close that gap? You know, what if parents need something? What if we need to get resources to families, to their homes? You know, we can look at how we can use our transportation people in a very different way. Also, our transportation personnel still will be transporting possibly our charter non-public students. So those, you know, we are obligated to transport those students as well. So we will possibly still be transporting those students this fall. So some of our workers, if we decide to move to all remote, will still be transporting students from our charter non-public schools.
Paulo DiMaria, what about our rural schools? they have a couple issues. Transportation has always been a huge issue for them because of the miles and the hard miles they put on their buses often. And then there's also the internet access issue.
Right, absolutely. And again, I, you know, tip my hat to all our rural districts, because when schools shut down in the spring, once again, their creative energies kicked into gear, and we saw a lot of creative solutions, everything to, you know, how to get meals and nutritious food to our students in remote places, as well as how to try to attempt to keep the education continuity going. You know, like I do, that addressing some of the internet access issues, as Alyssa was mentioning, in the cities, sometimes it's just a matter of affordability. It's available, but people don't always necessarily have it. In the rural areas, you actually have access issues that aren't, you know, solved overnight. So again, I think we're seeing a lot of people applying themselves in terms of what are creative approaches to addressing those needs, whether it's trying to, you know, deploy access to internet in different and creative ways, or finding ways to provide assignments to students that are still able to be, you know, informed and guided by teachers and so forth and so on, that don't necessarily require technology. As you said, the transportation issue is also a tremendous one. Fortunately, the health department guidelines, allow for a lot of flexibility in terms of how many students are on buses and the options that that districts will have for that type of activity. But again, we are all very attentive to making sure we do our best to keep students safe and protected, as well as staff safe and protected.
Robert, thanks for that question. Talisa Dixon, I got to let you go soon, I know. And I want to ask about regardless of the idea was, when you were going into a hybrid plan, which has now been set aside, waiting further information, but that the high school students would attend classes remotely. And I'm wondering, I know we often, like, you know, they're all still children, and they all still have issues for one reason or another. What young children may struggle with and challenge, the challenges for them in remote learning, doesn't mean there aren't challenges in remote learning for older students. And I'm wondering about your concerns about having all of them attend classes remotely, and also what we know about any data on how that might affect the dropout rate, particularly in an urban district like Columbus City Schools.
Well, first, we want to bring our high school students back,
right?
But with the social distancing guidelines, we simply can't. However, what we will do is have an attendance. We're going to have additional people that's going to help us. If we see students are not logging on, we're going to have people that's going to go to those homes, contact the parents, and see what why the student is not engaged on the online platform. They will have a device, thanks to some assistance from our wonderful mayor and the city council. So we want to remove all the barriers from students being able to connect with their teachers and connect with the online curriculum. And whatever we have to do to support that, we will do. But we want to make sure that our students are engaged in this online platform without any barriers getting in their way.
And one more quick caller who has a question for Talisa Dixon. Peter in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So here's my question. I really appreciate some of the things that Superintendent Dixon has said. However, some of them were a little bit vague, and with the pandemic and how serious this is, and school right around the corner, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if she would be willing to give us a couple of examples. She said that businesses have stepped up to help our students during this time when there's a budget shortfall and all. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if she could give us maybe one or two examples of specific businesses and what they've done. She also said that teachers have come up with lots of creative ideas, which I'm thrilled about. I'm wondering if she could give us maybe one or two examples of specific ideas that teachers have given that we've implemented.
Well, if in a little bit of time, Talisa Dixon, can you respond to Peter?
Yes. So I can give them one with our business partners. Business partners organization is I Know I Can. I Know I Can was the organization that stepped up and provided 1,600 hotspots for our students. Early on, we were giving computers to our families and had no idea that students could not access this online curriculum because they didn't have access to Wi-Fi. And we contacted them, and they stepped up and they provided those.
And that helped families tremendously. One, we found that families needed more than one computer because there were several students at home, and they were three and four students were sharing the computers. But two, we learned that they didn't have access to Wi-Fi. And that is so important. You know, again, as we move to a digital curriculum, if students don't have access to Wi-Fi, then they're not going to be able to access that curriculum. So that was one way the organization stepped up and provided that for us. Some other ways, some organizations have asked us not to give their names, but again, they've provided support with access. Well, one, I can tell CODA. CODA stepped up and provided transportation for our families to get to our food sites. You know, we had 15 grab-and-go locations, and early on, we didn't see many families taking advantage of that. And CODA CEO stepped up and said, Talisa, we will provide transportation free of cost to those families who needed to get to those locations to pick up their meals. And we're going to provide that again in the fall. So lots of coordination. We still are partnering with the Children's Hospital. They still have their Nationwide Children's Hospital. They have their mobile units. We will allow them to keep providing those services to our students. We want to make sure our students have access to healthcare, mm-hmm. and we allow them to provide those mobile units. So organizations and businesses like that who we are partnering with and want to make sure that we do not eliminate any services to our students and our families because of this.
Talisa Dixon, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. And thank you. Good to hear from you, Paulo.
Talisa Dixon is the superintendent of Columbus City Schools. Paulo Diamaria will stay with us. He's superintendent of public instruction for the state of Ohio. And we're going to hear from the president of the Ohio Education Association. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. When Ohio school children left the classrooms in mid-March to shelter at home during the pandemic outbreak, no one was sure when they would return. We're going on 5 months later, and mostly we're still unsure. Governor DeWine unveiled guidelines in early July, and many districts were unveiling their own plans in accordance. But the uptick in COVID-19 cases has changed that dynamic. Still with us is Paulo Diamaria. He's the Ohio Superintendent for Public Instruction. Joining us is Scott DeMauro. He is the president of the Ohio Education Association. That's the state's largest teachers union. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Good to be with you, Ann.
What's your sense about how the union, the local education associations, and teachers in general have been involved in the planning for what's next across the state?
Well, we've been providing support to our local unions across Ohio, making sure that they have good guidance in terms of how to use the collective bargaining process for creative problem solving, to fight to protect the legal rights of their members, and really, most importantly, make sure that every school district, as it's considering its reopening plan, is doing it with two things in mind. Number one, making sure that we're protecting the health and safety of every single student and staff member and family members of those people, as well as making sure that we are advocating for equitable learning opportunities for all students.
What do you mean by using the collective bargaining process for creative solutions at this time?
Well, when you look at the fact that school districts are planning for a variety of contingencies, that almost no one's going to be in full-time everyday instruction without some changes in working conditions, mm-hmm. But especially as you start looking at hybrid schedules, or remote learning plans, that's going to require departures from our collective bargaining agreements. Because Ohio has a collective bargaining law, and terms and conditions of employment are in the law, we have the right, and I think the obligation, to bargain those changes. And we want to make sure that we're doing that so that the interests of everybody, including employees and students, as well as management interests, are all taken into consideration as these important decisions are made.
It's quite a pot of stew, Paolo DiMaria, when you think about all the different, the moving pieces when it comes to education in the state of Ohio.
Indeed, indeed it is. I mean, one of the things, though, just to reflect a little bit about what Scott is saying, is, you know, translate some of the technical language into what actually happens on the ground. During the school building closure period early in the spring, we saw time and time and time again, and I'm sure Scott can build on this, teachers being flexible, working with administrators to figure out and ask themselves the question, what is really in the best interest of our students, and coming to agreements about what it is they're going to do in order to help. So they pivoted to remote learning. They pivoted to doing things that might not have ordinarily been part of their routines, calling, checking in with families, checking in with students. So we saw a tremendous commitment by teachers. And I think that commitment, even though we might look at it and not think that behind the scenes there were these kinds of conversations around collective bargaining agreements, but the bottom line is people collaborated, people were flexible. And I think that will manifest itself as we move forward.
Scott DiMaria, you know, I just might, you know, anecdotally, a neighbor of mine, math teacher in New Albany, was spending 8 solid hours a day on Zoom working with students. The hours that they were spending during these remote learning processes were pretty astounding for anyone who knows a teacher, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we've talked to our teachers across the state and asked them the question, you know, during remote learning, were you working harder, working about the same, or working less than you were before? And overwhelmingly, most of our members are saying that it was more work. But we're also hearing from a lot of people right now, because of the continuing concerns and the unpredictability of this virus,
yeah,
that are willing to do the extra work if it means keeping everybody safe. Everybody wants to get back to being with students. We all recognize that personal connection is so important, but especially in counties that are at level red, you know, in terms of the risk level with the spread of the virus, mm-hmm. until you get to a point where things really seem to be under control, you know, I think there are a lot of trade-offs that need to be made, and one of them is, hey, do the extra work, make sure that we're providing the support that students need in a remote setting, if that's what it takes. To make sure that we don't open prematurely and we don't put everybody in a situation where they're at risk of contracting the virus.
Jeff in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I always love your show.
Thank you.
I would like to hear President DiMaria and Superintendent DiMaria's thoughts on the idea that the governor should mandate that no school buildings open in any county that is at the level 3 code red on the state health department's public emergency map. The level 3 states that exposure is very widespread and that we need to limit activities as much as possible.
Paolo DiMaria, I'll let you start.
Sure. It's a great question. I think the principles that the governor has laid out, both through the Department of Health's guidelines, as well as the planning guide that's come out from the Department of Education, is really trying to be flexible and recognizing that local conditions can vary tremendously. The emphasis that we have put out there is make sure you're talking with your local health department. Because as you can imagine, some of our counties, even though you might see statistics that show trigger a particular status level, there can be a wide range of variability in terms of what the implications are of that for the operations of the particular school. So I think the governor recognizes that school administrators and communities and school boards are professionals. They have access to local health departments and they're best situated to evaluate the circumstances and coordinate with their local health departments in taking the necessary steps given the changes in the various alert levels.
And Scott DiMaria?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll say that we feel, you know, very good about the fact that the Governor DeWine engaged very collaboratively with lots of different stakeholders as he was developing his plan. And the focus on local control when it comes to decisions about how schools will deliver instruction, I think it's entirely appropriate. We would like to see more clear guidance from the governor on those health and safety protocols. Many of those were issued as recommendations. I think the governor missed an opportunity to tie the risk levels to those health recommendations for schools. As you probably know, the governor issued a mandate saying that staff need to wear masks, but just a recommendation about student mask wearing and about 6-foot social distancing. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of standards need to be a lot more clear and enforceable, I believe, especially in higher level risk counties, you know, counties that are in red or purple.
Paula DeMaria, what about the recommendations versus the mandates when it comes to the student mask wearing in particular? I mean, you have a teacher in a classroom wearing a mask, and unless it's an N95, it's not protecting the teacher, it's protecting the students from them. There are a lot more of them than there are of the teacher. I'm just wondering, can that change? Could it be tougher?
Sure, but I think what we're seeing, Anne, is that people are in fact embracing the recommendations. I mean, if we were not seeing anybody making choices about using masks or using social distancing, then I think we'd be a lot more concerned. But the fact of the matter is, you know, the case is being proven. People are stepping up, they're consulting with their local health departments, and they are in fact structuring their reopenings in ways that embrace and adopt those recommendations as befitting the particular circumstances of that community. So I think there's a lot of flexibility, and people are, in fact, taking advantage of that flexibility.
You know, we have just a few minutes left, and I want to ask both of you, what are you worried about? I mean, what's kind of keeping you awake at night, Paula DeMaria?
Well, the thing that keeps me awake at night is that we create more anxiety among children. Right. Every time children see adults who are either angry or, stressing out about what's going to happen, we forget that kids detect that. They feel that and it becomes part of their own stressors. Right now, they've gone through already a great bit of trauma when unexpectedly schools were closed and all sorts of things were happening. And so I think we need to take extra effort to make sure we stay calm, we help our students understand what's happening, and that we're all going to be supporting of them in getting through this, and to help alleviate some of the fears that they necessarily may come to the table with by virtue of their own uncertainties.
And Scott DeMauro, what about you?
Well, I mean, I know that our members, educators across Ohio, you know, care about students. They want to do what's best for students. But the fears that they have about their own health and safety are very real. I think we need to do everything we can to make sure that everyone's protected. And by the way, I worry not just about, educator safety. I have a colleague of mine who's been isolated at home with her 3 children who are all positive for COVID, who all were exhibiting different kinds of symptoms, you know, ages 19, 18, and 8. And so, you know, there's more and more evidence that younger people are getting the virus, that children are susceptible to the virus and can spread the virus. I think we just have to be really, really cautious about that, while at the same time, you know, keeping in mind the big picture of what do we need to do to meet the needs of all students. And so figuring out how to do that balance, and also.
Okay, we just lost Scott DeMauro. Paula DeMaria, are you there?
Yes, I am.
We don't know what happened, but that was weird. I guess I want to say thanks to Scott DeMauro, president of the Ohio Education Association, and sorry he was cut off like that. I'm not sure what happened. And Paula DeMaria, superintendent of public instruction for the state of Ohio. I really appreciate your time today, Paula. Thank you so much.
Great being with you, Ann. Keep up the great coverage you're doing on all the various state issues.
Thank you. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.